so here's the question. Would you pay more for a better NHS? Labour MP Chuka Omuna says we're going to have to contribute more if we want the NHS to continue doing what we expect it to do. This comes, of course, after reports of cancelled operations, increased waiting times and horror stories from our A&E departments. But he goes on to say most people would be prepared to pay more to fund the NHS. So our question this morning is, would you? 030 30 80 55 55 on the phones. In the studio this morning, former Health and Social Care Board Chief John Compton. Good morning to you, John.
Morning, Vinny.
And also on the line we have Patrick Mulholland from the trade union NHPSA. Good morning, Patrick.
Good morning, Vinny.
John, set this out for us in terms of why you think that maybe this is something we should consider.
Well, I absolutely do think it's something we should consider. There are very simple facts. It takes about 6% a year to keep the health service turning over financially, and we don't get 6% a year for it. And the only way to get 6% a year is to either ask society to pay a little bit more, and I believe most people would contribute more to it, or we have to take slightly less in terms of the service that we've got, because the numbers are the numbers, and you can't change that. And we've seen that this year just passed, haven't we, with proposals for savings plans and all of that. What actually happens is that each year government gives about somewhere between 2 and 3%. The service makes about 1 to 1.5% in terms of savings, and there's a 1 to 1.5% gap. And then people experience the consequences of cash control, slower care packages for older people, waiting times, if you like, for elective surgery, and waiting times in terms of recruitment and controlling workforce and all
now,
of that.
Now, John Compton, you know there will be many people shouting at the radio this morning saying that they already pay for it. They already pay their taxes, their national insurance, etc., and that all contributes to the NHS, and therefore why try and charge them twice for something that they are already digging deep in their pockets for?
Well, I think the point that he was making wasn't so much that there should be a new tax per se. I think what he was saying is that the percentage of money that goes to the health service isn't enough, and that perhaps if political parties were to have a much more mature debate with our society, which says we need to pay 1 or 2% per annum more directly to the NHS,
okay,
then people would be optimistic.
John, whether they add on, say, 2 or 3 or whatever percent to the national insurance, or they keep it as a separate tax and call it your NHS tax, it's the same thing. It's more tax, more money, more of a cost. Do you think, John, that people realise the service they are getting? We're all very quick to complain if there are delays or if there's problems with the service. But for example, if you are admitted to get your appendix out, you know, and you're in hospital for a day or 2 days, you go in to have a baby, you know, you're not well and you go and visit your GP, do they realise the monetary cost of each of those occasions?
Well, I think that's one of the real difficulties. You know, in the rest of life, we all understand the relationship between what we do and money. So if you go to buy groceries for a week, you probably as a family know plus or minus £10 to £20 what you're going to spend. If you're going to buy an item of clothing, you know how much you can spend on it. Most people would not know what it costs to, if you like, manage a script, a prescription. Most people wouldn't know what it would cost to do a stitch. Most people wouldn't know what it would cost to have a week in hospital. So we have lost the relationship, I think, in society between the cost of our service and the service that we get. And I think the attraction of having the debate and the attraction of having the, if you like, the tax sort of system is to give that better contract with the society so that people understand what they're getting and what they pay for, and also can hold it to account. Because I think there is this belief, isn't there, in our society that, well, it's a sort of a bottomless pit. You just keep throwing money at it and it still asks for more. You do have to get to a point where you have a contract where you can have a much more sensible debate.
Patrick Mulholland?
Vinny, I mean, I must say, I think this the points that have been raised by this Labour MP and the points that John are raising are wrong-headed. And if we are to have a serious discussion about the future of the health service, I think, first of all, we have to ask the question, who is going to lead this discussion? And it can't be the architects of the crisis in the health service, the people who have been running the health service for the last 20 and 30 years. And I don't mean the local managers, and I don't mean the people on the ground and the nurses, etc., who are doing an excellent job, but the politicians and the senior bureaucrats who had a huge amount of control over the health service, who took strategic decisions, who did not oppose other strategic decisions when they should have, they are not now the people who should be taking the lead in the discussion about the future of the service. It's a little bit like, you know, burglars coming together to have a debate about what security measures we should all have.
I'm not sure they would agree with that, but given what you've suggested yourself, Patrick, that this is such a long-term problem and the issues have been building up year after year, where do you start with that?
I'm absolutely sure they would not agree with that, and that is my point. My point here, Vinny, is we need to have a mature discussion that starts by saying, look, how did we get to where we are today? So let's think about some core points about the health service. First of all, can we afford it? Well, the reality is, if a bank needs bailed out, we can afford it. If we need new weapons of mass destruction, we can afford them. If we need new battleships that leak, we can afford them. If we need new projects for heating, you know, RHA, we can afford all of these things. It's only when it comes to the health service we can't afford things. So we have to be clear about this. The decision not to fund the health service is not an economic one per se. It is a political decision taken by political masters who are deciding that the health service is not a priority for them. But I think for the ordinary person on the ground, they would say the first priority for funding in this country should be the health service.
Okay, well, of course, just to come back on that, Patrick, the health service in Northern Ireland, for example, gets half of the Northern Ireland Bloc grant. So, you know, I don't think it's fair to suggest it is not prioritised in that way. But as you're listening this morning, I want you to have a think. You know, you pay your taxes, but if someone said to you, right, if you paid another 20 quid a year, 30 quid a year, I'm not sure, just totally picking this number off the top of my head, then waiting times would be much less and you would be getting a better service. Would you see that as value for money? 0, 30, 80, 55, 55. Yes, Patrick, go ahead.
Could I make this point, Vinny? I think then we need to look at real costs in the health service. We need to talk about real costs. Now, there's real costs that we need to meet, such as proper pay levels for staff in the health service, who frankly are grossly underpaid, proper service provision, and by that I mean proper things like domestic care in people's homes, not a 5-minute visit or a 15-minute visit, but a proper domestic care, all of those things being properly funded, which cost money, and there's no question of that, and it's an additional cost the health service is not covering at the minute, and we would need to cover. But there's also the real costs in the health service of PFAs, of outsourcing, of companies making super profits out of the health service and out of public services. Companies like Carillion, which are a disaster zone, but are still making a profit, you know, have been stripping money out of the health service over the years. So we need to boil this back down for people to understand there's a fortune being made in profit that shouldn't be happening in the health service, and there's an underfunding of real services. So we need to talk about the real cost of health, and we need to fund it because the money is there in our economy. Okay. It's a political decision not to.
Not that I am defending that company, but just I think it's important to say, Patrick, at this point, that if, for example, within the NHS, things are shipped out, different services or provisions, you know, to private companies, then of course they are going to try and make a profit, and to say that they shouldn't do that.
Exactly.
But John, there will be many that will agree with a lot of the points that Patrick make in terms of the management or the structures within the NHS, and if certain changes were made, it could be more efficient and therefore cost us less or be able to make our money go that bit further, and therefore this suggested increase wouldn't be needed.
Well, yes, there is that. And of course, a very large organisation like the NHS always can make and improve its sort of savings and improve its efficiency. But the core principle is that if you take Northern Ireland, it has 50% of the bloc is spent on health. You know, at what point is it 55%? Is it 60%? And what are the implications for the rest of Northern Ireland if you do that? The truth of the matter is that with an ageing population, and the nature of the ageing population that we've got, like by 2040, for example, we will have twice as many people over the age of 85 as we have currently, about 400,000 people. Out of that, that will mean that we will be dealing with about 60,000 more people who have dementia. Now, you can't simply ask a service to absorb that, to deal with that, and to do to provide a level of care that we would all expect if you don't pay for it. And I think it's entirely reasonable to have a very mature debate with society about what is the cost of the NHS and what are our expectations of the NHS. There are, of course, political decisions to be taken about where you invest money and what gets spent on. But I think there is no other method other than to come to the political debate and have that view and have that debate in our society. Because otherwise, what we know we will face is a service which continues to struggle.
And okay. John, can I make this point? I don't disagree with you. I think there's a need for a fundamental change in how we fund our health service. But if we start with, 50% of the current block grant goes to health, we're starting from the wrong point. Can I ask you, if you compare our current health funding in Northern Ireland to the amount of money that's spent over the last 5 years bailing out banks, how does it compare?
Well, I mean, of course, I don't disagree with the political debate about what a society determines to spend. I think the issue about banks that we all learned very harshly is that banks are a utility. And in fact, most of our society would cease to function if we didn't actually have a bank working. So I think there are different issues there. And I agree with you.
No, but surely they're the same issue, because the issue here is there is public money when it is needed by our political masters to bail out their friends. There just isn't public money when it comes to the block grant for Northern Ireland and when it comes to the health service. And if we're going to start a discussion, rather than talking about taxing the ordinary person on the ground even more, what we should be saying is, no, our economic structure needs to change. To my mind, that's a socialist economy where there's a redistribution of wealth, where we fund public services first and foremost over everything else, because that's what the public actually want. But surely that has to be the starting point, because the only other discussion you're having is a discussion about how do you cut up the ever-decreasing cake that is the Northern Ireland block grant.
I want to bring in some calls at this point. 030 30 80 55 55. Joe in Belfast. Good morning, Joe.
Hi, Vinny. Vinny, this is a farce. This is an absolute farce. You see this talk? They'll talk about, how are we going to fund it? And, where are we going to find this money? 80 billion a year, is tax avoided by corporations in the top 1%. Let's get real here. That would actually wipe out what they actually siphon away and avoid in tax each year, would wipe out the actual national debt in 1 year. And this is being done every year. Now, let's get real about this. 50 billion spent on HS2, 50 billion being spent on upgrading Trident.
You think the priorities are all wrong, Joe?
The priorities are all wrong. There's tons of money there, Vinny.
We can't put all the money into the NHS as well, Joe. Your infrastructure and things like that need to be funded as well. And
just to do all that. Just this to go, is the point I'm making.
Just to go back to the point you are making, and back to this Labour MP, because he addresses some of those issues as well in this article. He says increasing corporation tax, making the super rich pay more, and clamping down on tax avoidance are all necessary.
Waffle.
He's agreeing with you. Joe, let me finish the sentence, because to an extent he is agreeing with you. Corporation tax, making the super rich pay more, and clamping down on tax avoidance are all necessary. So this is what
we've heard this for years, Vinny. Okay. We need to actually do something.
And this Labour MP finishes that sentence by saying it will not plug the hole. So basically, Joe, he is saying it is not enough.
Vinny, of course it'll plug the hole. Let's get real.
How do you
here.
Know?
Seriously, let's say it for what it is. This is a farce. There's tons of money there. This thing that they go on about hammering on down on the poor, are you prepared to pay more? This is all a nonsense. We already pay far more than we need to be paying towards everything. It's the rich that aren't paying. If they paid their way, there wouldn't be a problem.
Would you pay more yourself, Joe, if it meant that you had no waiting lists?
No, I wouldn't, Vinny, because I already pay an awful lot out, left, right and centre. And I'll tell you what, Facebook in 2014, just as one example, paid £4,500 in corporation tax.
Yeah.
Right? £4,500 in corporation tax. Now that makes me really angry. They should be paying $400 million in corporation tax. Why did they not pay that? Why has nothing been done about it and for the last 4 years? This is what makes me angry.
Okay. Well, John, there'll be many people that will 100% agree with Joe. They will see that they already pay their way, they do enough, and it's quite often, as they would see it, the people that have the money that don't. And if it comes down to an increase in tax to something like this, some of the very rich people maybe don't really depend on the NHS, so this wouldn't really affect them. So once again, it's the poorer
trillions
members.
In offshore accounts, Vinny.
It's the working class people that will be the ones stung by this.
Yeah, and I have a lot of sympathy actually for the position that's put, and I think what the Labour MP was saying yesterday is he's looking for a fairer system, and I don't think anybody disagrees with that. That's what I want, a fairer system, and it does mean things like corporation tax are properly paid and all of those sorts of issues. But I think you can't get away from the fact that as we head into an increasing population, for example, in the 1960s, I think for every person who was retired, there were four people working. Now we're moving to a situation where it'll be one-on-one, and that has big implications about how we pay for our services and the services that we get. It has big implications for the nature of the services. Those are unavoidable. Now, there is a very active debate to be had about how to pay for it, and I think the really important thing here is to have the debate. And to have all of the diverse views in the debate about the priorities that are talked about in terms of government and about things about corporation tax, about redistribution, all of that is really important. But it doesn't get away from the fact that we have to change how we fund the NHS. Okay. Otherwise, we have what we have.
Yes, Patrick, go ahead.
I have the good fortune that my mother's still living. And she was about before the National Health Service came into being. So she can describe to me how it used to be under a private health system and then the move to a national health system. And the jump from that disgusting, exploitative private health system to the national health system that happened post-Second World War, when the country was supposed to be in grinding poverty and destroyed, that jump was far more difficult than any transition we need to make today. So there has to stop being an exaggeration of the situation. The reality is this: we do not need more tax to pay for the health service. What we need is the parasite companies that are making a profit out of ill health need to get the hell out of the health service. The people who are supposed to pay their tax need to stop dodging their tax.
Sorry, you've made that point before about people making a profit from the NHS. Yeah. If people within the NHS decide they're going to farm out some of the services to a private company, of course they're going to make a profit. So that point is irrelevant.
It's relevant in that maybe the
decision should not be made within the service to farm that out.
Should not be made by politicians to farm the services out. Because the politicians are farming the services out, not for the good of the health service. They're farming them out so as their friends and big business can make a profit out of it. The other point I would make on this national insurance issue, people need to be very, very careful. That seems like a nice, interesting little catch-all. Now, first of all, the politician who raised it said it's not a solution. If you read the article carefully, what he actually says is it would not be able to deal with the issues within the health service because it is only one taxation band and had to look to tax people in other areas. That should be said. The second thing is national insurance has a cap on it. It is not a progressive tax. The rich, as a proportion of their income, pay less than the ordinary man and woman on the street.
Patrick.
So what it is the ordinary man and the woman on the street, yet again, paying so as big business can make more profit. It's not an acceptable way to run a health service.
Okay. Just to go back to more comments from that Labour MP. In the end, he says, we are going to have to contribute more if we want the NHS to continue doing what we expect of it. And really, that comes down to money. Let's go back to some more calls. Stephen in Antrim. Good morning, Stephen.
Hi, good morning, Vinny. I think part of the problem, when you go back to the root of it, is this idea, whenever the NHS was formed, of course, that it would be free at the point of delivery and so on. And the public have been kept out of this debate for decades. It has been a political football between the two main parties in the United Kingdom, Labour and Conservative, in their four-year cycles forever. But I think, having worked in the health service for many decades, even those inside this behemoth, a massive organisation, have no idea about the costs of running the service. So politicians aren't really aware. The public aren't aware.
Yeah.
no one is aware of the costs associated with this. And we need to have a national debate on this, because now we're up to around 9% of GDP being spent on health. But just this week, you covered the nursing shortage. You know, that's real. That would be a policy issue. You know, how do we provide enough adequately trained and compensated nurses to do the clinical job of providing care?
Would you pay more, Stephen, if it was an increase in tax of some way?
Well, I think that, yes, I think in a ring-fenced manner, so that we knew that the monies, because these are major commitments, isn't
yes.
it? But those monies would, you know, then every member of the public would know that it would be paying for sufficient nurses and other clinical people to deliver the services that are there.
Let me ask you this, Stephen: if it was a case that you would pay, let's say, an extra 2 or 3%, say a separate tax for the NHS, would you expect a reduction elsewhere? For example, in your income tax. Because we're currently paying for that, or is this? Would you see this as a top-up tax? It's specifically to help the NHS and to make sure you get the service you want.
Yes, well, we've already heard mention of the fact that national insurance is not a progressive tax. When you look at the amount that is taken out of a wage in terms of national insurance, it would hardly pay for the doses for a few medicines. Never mind, you know, the whole business of hospitals and social care and so on. We are disconnected entirely from the real costs. And until we engage in a national debate about this, we will find ourselves struggling, because we're on the OECD, if you like, average. But countries like France and Germany and Sweden and so on all spend far more on their health service, and I think we're crumbling because we're constantly going from cycle to cycle trying to implement quick fixes.
Okay, Stephen, thank you, Stephen. Jim in South Belfast. Good morning, Jim.
Hello, good morning, Vinny. Give me a couple of seconds just to make my own opinion about the NHS.
Yes,
it's too big, it's too cumbersome, and basically what Stephen was saying, or he's been in for many years, I haven't. It stumbles from one crisis to another, and this is where I believe it falls down. It's run on its own merit. It's not run the way a business should be run. Everything should have a business case, and we've seen these programs on television where we have extremely successful multinational company CEOs going in to the NHS and saying, oh, listen, you could just tweak that, you could move that, you could do that. And in the end, they say, oh, no, we're the NHS, we don't do that. It's one big open purse, and that is the problem. It's so mismanaged from the outset, it's never going to be able to work. We're always going to have to say to ourselves, we've got to pay more, we've got to pay more, but then the money disappears. Now, this is the one thing that gets me. People talk about, I heard Patrick Mulhong talking about private companies. If it wasn't for the private companies, but tens of thousands of people sitting in extreme pain the day. The private companies do it for less or the same price as the NHS can do the operation. So how are we losing out? We're not.
Okay.
I think there should be more outsourced. And then we would cut down the waiting list for people who are in chronic pain.
Jim, that's a fair point. Let's put that to Patrick Mulholland. Patrick, you know, when it comes to waiting lists, quite often it's the private companies that can help mop up that overspill. And we've seen before when they stopped that, waiting lists within the NHS being done directly by them went up.
Yeah, I'll make a couple of points on this if I can, Vinny. I mean, first of all, I would advise Jim to take a wee look at the papers and the news over the last few days. I don't know whether you noticed Carillion or not. A disaster area for public services and the health service. InterServe, one of the other big providers, is now declaring profit warnings as well. These companies are in serious difficulties in and of themselves. These are the people who provide a lot of the services within the public services. They're part of the privatisation. But the other thing that is going on in the health service that really needs to be looked at now, that I know it's something we have to be very careful about. There needs to be a serious debate about senior health service staff and consultants, etc., who are providing both a public service and a private service, and what the link is.
In other parts of the public service, you're not allowed to do that because there's a conflict of interest.
Okay.
And I think John maybe could address that issue, and he would maybe know a bit more detail on it than I would know. But there is a serious issue there. Can I just make another point here, Vinnie?
Just quickly, because I want to go to the news and get some more callers in, Patrick, so quick as you can.
Sometimes when we're talking about the high economics of this, we can sometimes forget ordinary people are suffering. The staff are suffering. And people are actually dying now in our health service. And it's an awful situation for staff and families. But people are dying in our health service because there's not enough funding in it. So this issue has to be addressed properly. And I would urge your listeners to involve themselves in this debate, in this discussion. And I would urge them to defend the health service that their grandparents, their parents, and they themselves have paid for and built up over the years. And don't let the Tory government tear it apart.
Okay. Patrick Mulholland, if you can stay there for a moment, and John Compton as well. We'll take more of your calls on this in a moment. 03030 80 55 55.